From the bizarre world of the paranormal to the sinister secrets of the U.S. government, the Black Vault has become known worldwide as the premier spot for anything and everything conspiracy. Now, join me, John Greenwald Jr., as we dive into the research together in hopes to decipher these mysteries. This is the Black Vault Radio. That's right, this is the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. Excited about today's show. David Sirita, friend and colleague of mine and producer of the new film From Here to Andromeda. I've been reading a lot of headlines about this. It's making headlines in quite a few different media outlets. I just saw David online during a Fox and Friends interview. He was on Fox News about the beginning week of July, of course, with the media latching on to the Roswell incident and the 60th anniversary, 60 years since Roswell happened, and yet they bring all the researchers on, and CNN did a piece with Stan Friedman and Buzz Aldrin and all these guys, like five of them, and give, you know, what, 90 seconds to the topic and then pretty much try and make everybody look bad and call it a commercial break. Unfortunately, David ran into a similar problem. They pretty much wouldn't let him finish a sentence. At least that was my reaction to it. Not speaking for David. He's on hold. He's coming on to the Black Vault Radio in just a few minutes. And I want to ask him about his reaction to that Fox News interview they had him on because of his new film, From Here to Andromeda. And we're going to be talking to David, talking about his journey in this film. What was his goal? If the Earth were to destroy itself, could we find another home? And that's kind of the question he poses in his film, From Here to Andromeda. Check it out, fromheretoandromeda.com, David Sirita coming up. And hey, if you are coming from Yahoo, this is your first time here, and you saw my interview on Yahoo, and you don't know what I'm talking about, stay tuned. I'll tell you about it in just a second. But if this is your first time, write me an email. Click on the feedback form in the main menu, or if you just go to the homepage, all the way at the bottom, there's a feedback form. Let me know what you think about the data, about the documents, about the Yahoo News story. Contact me. I'd love to hear from you. If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about with this Yahoo interview, I invite you all to go to I'm going to give you a web address here, POTW.news.yahoo.com. POTW stands for people on the web. POTW.news.yahoo.com. Don't put the www in there, just POTW.news.yahoo.com. Yahoo came to my apartment a few weeks ago and did an interview with me, a sit down interview. Kevin Seitz was the field correspondent, Jamie Rubin, the producer of the segment, both. Very sweet people. They came in, did a great interview. They did the story. It's about 3.5-4 minutes in length right there on Yahoo. I'm on the front page at the recording of this radio show. If you're listening via the archives and it's weeks and weeks later, don't worry. Go to the site. As far as I know, it's going to be archived on the right-hand side. There's a menu, People on the Web. Just search down. I'm sorry, People of the Web. Just search down that menu. You'll be able to find John Greenwald Jr., myself, right there on Yahoo. So I'm excited. Also, if you saw it on the front page, as far as I know, at the recording of this, it hasn't appeared yet, but in a few hours, it's going to be on Yahoo.com's front page for an hour. That's what I've heard. So I'm looking forward to that. And all the people that are going to come to the Black Vault, learn some new material that have never been there before. And again, I want to hear from you, even if you've been here before. Give me an email anyway. Let me know what you think, and thank you for tuning in to the Black Vault Radio. It's going to be a very informative show. David is a very intelligent man, knows what he's talking about, and with this film, From Here to Andromeda, he did his research. David Sirita, producer of this film, coming up right here on BVRN. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. Let me welcome onto the air Mr. David Sarita. David, thank you so much for joining us here on the Black Vault Radio.
Yeah, John, it's good to be with you.
I appreciate you joining us, and I just wanted to bring you on because you released a new film called From Here to Andromeda. It sounds fascinating to me. I had just watched the Fox News interview you did a few weeks ago. All these news agencies are kind of latching on to the Roswell topic, especially at the top of July. You know, I don't know if it's just for ratings or if they really do care about it. I want to get into that with you in a little bit and talk about your reaction to how did Fox treat you. Before we get into all that and the background to your film, let me know about David. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into this field.
Well, for me, it all started just too early in life. You know, on the way home from elementary school in Berkeley, California in 1968, I saw a flying saucer, you know, a classic silver metallic disc hovering silently. I built model airplanes at that age, you know, 7 years old, and I remember building these Revel model kits and being very aware of, you know, airplanes, and I was a Star Trek fan, and at that age my brothers and I all watched Star Trek. So we're looking up and there's this crowd of people, you know, assembling on the street, you know, pointing up at this thing and pounding on neighbors' doors even to tell them to get outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously it wasn't the Goodyear blimp. I mean, I know what those look like. And if I would have had a video camera like I have today, a high-definition, you know, video camera, and zoomed in on this thing, it would be the best, most clear daylight footage of a flying saucer ever, I mean, over a major city. And, you know, years later, I realized the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab is right up on the hill in the East Bay, and they would have had a clear view of this thing had anybody been looking. And after a full 20 minutes, the thing just went invisible in a blink of an eye.
Wow.
And then when I got home, you know, I told my mom, and my mom was in the middle of a divorce, and we had, within a week of that sighting, we had moved to, my mom was, you know, going out with a new person, and whom she would later marry, David Cooper. My name changed to David Cooper. And I kept having these dreams in our first house on Glenwood Glay in the Berkeley Hills of the flying saucer propulsion system. I kept dreaming about one set of lights spinning clockwise and one set of lights spinning anti-clockwise, and it kept happening on a regular basis. And one night, when we had a babysitter, I remember going into this really deep state of paralysis where I couldn't move my body, and I was paralyzed by some force, and I remember just screaming my head off and the babysitter coming down and finally, you know, waking, you know, getting out of bed, and something happened on the other side of that. I don't know whether it was abduction, whether it was contact, just straight contact, but there was something happening there, and I've never really figured out what it was.
Well, let me stop you right there. Have you ever, you know, because that does sound like a classic sign of a contact or an abduction, especially we've talked about it here on the Black Vault Radio. Have you ever considered a regression to see what happened, or do you?
I've thought about it recently because I've had a number of contact experiences as a mature adult, but I rarely talk about my experiences with contact. I've never been physically taken,
mm-hmm.
but I've had beings appear right in front of me that I've seen, you know, that in fact, in the first scene in From Here to Andromeda is a real-life scene. It's something that can happen to me on a regular basis, and I'm seeing this, you know, interdimensional or ghost-like being. And I see them with my eyes open. I feel them when they're coming. I get this static kind of energy in my body. I jump out of bed, and there's a being in front of me. And some of the beings I've seen are interstellar. And this particular one that appears to me, this thing, this actually really happened, but it was this woman who was veiled with this kind of space-age blue veil over her face and her feet. And it's interesting because, I mean, it's hovering right over my girlfriend, right next to me, and it seems to be interested in her, and I'm scrambling and, you know, using my hand like a giant eraser on a chalkboard trying to make her go away because I'm wondering, what is she doing? You know, what is she doing to Crystal? Why is she doing that? And I later realized that, you know, in deep Christian mysticism, or in even Jewish mysticism, in the Bible, you have accounts of what are called the Elohim, or the supreme angels, whose feet and face are so powerful as transmission points that no human could survive looking at them. So they're covered.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in the Ark of the Covenant, the angels that are made of gold and that are apparently on the actual Ark itself, they cover their faces and their feet with wings. And the reason they do is because those transmission points are too powerful in energy for humans. So I was wondering if that's why she was covered in her feet and her face. But
interesting.
Nevertheless, you know, days later, I look in CNN News, actually the next morning, and I see it's September 1st, 2006, and the headline is, you know, if we destroy this planet, will science find us a new one? You know, and CNN had been running all these stories on global warming and, you know, the whole idea that climatic catastrophes and global warming is escalating.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the whopper headline: if we destroy the planet, will science find us a new one? And we know in NASA's vast search at that time, they hadn't even found one proper candidate for an Earth-like planet that could sustain human life. And, you know, so that means if there's nothing in our galaxy, then we have to look in another galaxy. And ultimately, we don't even know how to get to another star system as far as the known, you know, known physics and known propulsion publicly. But getting to another galaxy is, I mean, the ultimate conundrum. And Andromeda is our closest galaxy, you know, 2.2 million light years away. So doing the speed of light, it would take over 2 million years to get there, and that's just not feasible. So that was the goal of the film, is to find out either how to live sustainably on Earth, and we interview 25 or so fascinating personalities. We look at crop circles. We look at the UFO phenomena. We interviewed, you know, Robert Thurman, who's the professor of Tibetan Buddhism at Columbia College in New York and happens to be Uma Thurman's father.
Oh,
and we interviewed, you know, a Lockheed Martin senior research scientist near the end of the film. And we remember from Project Disclosure the statements that Ben Rich, the former head of Lockheed Skunk Works, saying that we already have the technology to go to the stars and beyond, but it would take an act of God to get that technology out to benefit humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. I mean, many people feel, including Gary McKinnon, the British computer hacker, that the government has the technology we need to get off, you know, oil and go to the stars, and we're hiding it. And we're willing to destroy our own planet rather than release that technology publicly. And here we have a statement by Ben Rich, former head of Lockheed Skunk Works, you know, verifying what McKinnon believes he found in his Black Vault research. And so now we get an interview with a living 83-year-old senior research scientist who has worked for Howard Hughes, Texas Instruments. He's designed the Stinger missile, which was called Red Eye for General Dynamics, all the infrared invisible camera systems for the military. This is, and worked on classified aircraft at Lockheed for 20 years. I mean, he has 23 or 26 U.S. patents on file and many that are classified. His name is Boyd Bushman. And he shows us on camera how UFOs work, how anti-gravity works, how he reverse engineered it. And he charges that one of his best friends is a Navy doctor who treated a young pilot who just shot down the flying saucer at Roswell. And I charged him with what kind of a weapon, because bullets were only 1,500 miles an hour back then, and today, you know, they may even be twice as fast, but you can't shoot one of these things down with a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, no, no. He starts laughing. He said, we have all kinds of things out there. Well, what did we have in 1947? So I researched, and I found, I matched the actual weapon that was used to take down the Roswell craft. And it's something that is so classified and so little known to the public. But in the FBI, in their on their website under FOIA, and I'm sure you know about this,
mm-hmm.
they have over 2,000 pages of formerly classified UFO files, all under J. Edgar Hoover and all dated, most of them are dated starting in the early 1940s and going to 1947. They have the original Kenneth Arnold sighting report in there with his name blacked out everywhere. And, of course, if you know the sighting, you can see that it's really his. And then we have these documents that are Tesla files, Nikola Tesla files. And they're classified files about the death of Nikola Tesla. And that's where we find the weapon that brought this thing down.
So you do, you're a firm believer in the fact that the U.S. government shot down the UFO at Roswell, just so I have that straight.
Well, it looks like what happened, yes, I am, and here's why. It looks like what happened is, relying on these FBI documents, it looks like in 1947 and earlier, much earlier, we were seeing UFOs all over this country in a post-World War II environment. So we don't know if the Germans have developed advanced propulsion craft, if the Russians have, or the Japanese. We don't know they're aliens at this point. We just know we're being invaded. You know, something is in our skies.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, you know, of course, the atomic bomb was being developed, and it started in 1938 when Einstein and Leo Szilard, his assistant, wrote President Roosevelt the famous letter urging the fission of uranium. And then, you know, by the time 1945 has come, you know, we're testing atomic bombs in White Sands, New Mexico, at the Trinity site in July, you know, the 9th, the 5th. I mean, nobody, I keep getting different dates on Trinity, but anyway, it was that week that we tested the first atomic bomb. And 2 years later, roughly the same week, we have three crash sites all around the Trinity site, you know, one at Roswell, plane this St. Augustine, another one near the site. So so something was going on. But when we look at the FBI documents, the sightings all over this country include what appears to be a crash-retrieved or shot-down flying saucer in the Pacific Northwest. And it also includes, and I cite this in From Here to Andromeda, this is really a whopper, and it's a mind-bender. There's one case in North Hollywood, and the date is July the 8th, which is roughly the time of, you know, the week of the Roswell incident. There's a flying saucer retrieved that was that crashed in a woman's yard on Magnolia Street in North Hollywood. And when they retrieved the saucer, it's 30 inches wide. It's made of aluminum, and it has a radio tube mounted in the inside of it. And it was claimed that a kid, a teenager, who worked at a local gas station, built it as an experiment. Anti-gravity, successful anti-gravity built by a teenager.
Hmm.
Well, it turns out in these FBI documents, amidst the larger, you know, aircraft that are going more than 1,800 miles an hour, like the Kenneth Arnold sighting, all over the country, not just Arnold, there are many sightings preceding Roswell. There are these little flying saucers that were allegedly built by kids, and there are several of them. So what I suspect is that there was some kind of contact, just like what happened to me. I had, in 1968, saw a flying saucer in daylight, started having dreams about the propulsion system, but I had, you know, I was much too young to figure out, you know, how I was going to conduct a little experiment to see what this all meant. But it looks like some kids were getting these transmissions in the physics of the propulsion systems, and they built little model flying saucers. And when the FBI found these, they thought, oh, here's the answer to our flying saucer mystery. You know, little kids are building these things, but there's no statement from J. Edgar Hoover or anybody about what a revelation this kind of technology is, because we don't have anti-gravity
right.
in 1947. In fact, today, where are those kids today? Where, I mean, we can only imagine they got locked up in Area 51 in defense labs and have sequestered and isolated this technology for all time. And now, if we had access to that technology, what could we do with it? I mean, how would we apply it to you know, solving world problems?
Right.
There's just a million things you can do with it.
There is a million things, David. And the film is From Here to Andromeda, www.fromheretoandromeda.com. Check it out during the break. Cool music coming your way right here on theblackvault.com. This is John Greenwald with BBRN. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. We're talking to David Sirita about his new film, From Here to Andromeda. And David, thank you so much for joining us here on the Black Vault Radio. I'm curious, what would we do with that anti-gravity technology if the government were to come out and say, look, we have it, this is how it works, what's the next step? What would the human race, or what would the United States, if we weren't to share it, what would we do with it?
Well, firstly, Boyd Bushman, our Lockheed Martin senior research scientist, confirms Ben Rich's statement by showing us on camera how it works. So there are several smaller experiments that he shows on camera that we can actually do ourselves that gives us a mini model, a working model of anti-gravity. And then he shows us basically schematic-type drawings from Boeing Convair in 1959 of nuclear-powered flying saucers that we reverse-engineered at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And he testifies on camera that he knows who built these nuclear-powered flying saucers. So we know he'll teach us how anti-gravity works, and if you've paid attention in grade 12 high school science, you will understand what he's talking about. If you didn't, you might get a little lost, but, I mean, literally grade 12 science can figure this out. If you have a better education in science than that, this is going to be a breeze for you because it's not really that difficult. And the question is, what will we do with it? Well, firstly, you think of a car. I mean, this is one of the things I've talked to Boyd Bushman about. We've got to develop an anti-gravity company, and if I can cancel out 50% of the weight charge of gravity of a Hummer or any car, even the new Prius, what will happen to the fuel economy of that vehicle?
Well, that's interesting.
It will probably double.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can cancel out 75%, of course, it keeps going up from there. But there's a certain point where I can only cancel out so much of the gravity because the brakes won't work. I mean, you'll go sliding across the pavement because you won't be really stuck to the ground. So the next level of it is applying it to aircraft, the space shuttle. If I can cancel out 50% of the weight of the space shuttle, most of the fuel on it for any aircraft is used in liftoff, fighting that initial burst of the pull of gravity, you know, at ground level. And once an airplane gets up higher, the pull of gravity gets weaker, and of course it takes less fuel to maintain flight.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be two very obvious applications. And the others are if you could levitate a car off the ground, and you have no crankshaft and no tires, and little ion thrusters are used for braking and turning, how much energy does it take to go 80 miles an hour? Well, most of the energy in a car is used to fight gravity going up and down hills, turning a heavy crankshaft to rip tires across a pavement. Now, most of that is wasted energy. And most of that is, you know, what we call one phase of inertia, which is fighting the resistance of gravity and the force of the huge amount of force that you need to move the tires across the pavement. Now, if I can hover a car off the ground, as far as energy efficiency goes, to go 80 miles an hour, tiny little ion thrusters that are solar powered will send that car 100 miles an hour, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then reverse thrusters will cause it to brake, you know, or turn left or right. So ultimately what it means is the key to zero-point energy, there are two phases of it. One is canceling out your forces, your resistance to movement. And the other is, of course, you know, attaining an energy source that is non-polluting and perpetual. And if you apply the two together, you don't need some whopper energy source to get, you know, space cars to be flying around at even hundreds of miles an hour. So that's those are the first things we could do with it, and that's a massive revolution. But Boyd Bushman goes much further, because we remember Ben Rich, who has now passed away, the former head of Lockheed, said, we already have the technology to go to the stars and beyond, not just, you know, anti-gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So Bushman tells us the secret to going to the stars and beyond and ultimately how we get to the Andromeda galaxy. And this is not just theoretical paper. He tells us in the beginning of the film that we have already identified an energy source that is not even atomic, meaning non-nuclear. Not solar, not wind, not even atomic, and they've already identified it. So it's already working. So I think, British computer hacker Gary McKinnon is correct. I mean, I have vindicated him in this film. I have proven that he is correct in what he found.
Well, I'm anxious to see it, David. The film is From Here to Andromeda. We're already at the bottom of the hour. Please stay tuned. There's much more coming up with David Sirita and his new film, From Here to Andromeda. Check it out online. It looks amazing. I definitely want to get a copy of this. FromHereToAndromeda.com. Check it out. We'll be right back here on the Black Vault Radio. You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. We're talking to David Sirita and his new film, From Here to Andromeda. Check it out online, www.fromheretoandromeda.com. And that's the great thing about Black Vault Radio. You can surf the web while you're listening right there in your browser. If you're listening via theblackvault.com, just start another browser, start searching From Here to Andromeda.com. David, it sounds like a fascinating film. I've yet to see it. I definitely want to get a copy. And I know one of the pressing questions on everybody's mind while they're listening to you talk is obviously you have the video proof of what you're talking about because you say it's in your film. Can you tell us and people that are listening, or can you tell me and people that are listening, what exactly are we going to see? And please tell us as much as you can, how does this really work?
Well, what Bushman does is he'll do a, I mean, here's a simple experiment he did. Firstly, you know, if we remember Galileo's experiment with the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is, you know, high school. I actually learned this in elementary school, so I don't know how many people were paying attention, but when you drop a feather or a hammer, in fact, this was done in one of the Apollo missions, astronaut, I'm trying to remember his name because this is, I actually use this footage in the film. Regardless whether you drop a 100-pound ball or a nail or a dime, they both fall towards the Earth if you drop them at the same time at the same rate of speed, right? So the velocity of fall, regardless of weight, is identical, regardless of an object's weight or mass. So Boyd Bushman, what he does is he realizes that gravity must have a magnetic component. So he does an experiment where he buys two $5,000 super magnets, and he drills a hole in the middle of these magnets, And if you know, if you've ever played with magnets and you take, you know, two magnets and you push them north-north or south-south, you know, like poles, they push, they repel each other, they push away from each other. So with a you know, a set of $5,000 super magnets, if you try to push them together, the force pushing them apart is going to be very powerful. And if you're not careful, they'll flip over, and the north-south will attract, and they'll smash together with such force, they'll probably shatter the magnets. So what Bushman did is he drilled holes in both of them, and he puts them north-north, and he bolts them down with a brass non-ferrous, meaning non-iron shaft. And that what happens when you use brass is it doesn't get magnetized because it doesn't have any iron in it. So he bolts them down together so they're facing each other like a millimeter away. So the force pushing them apart is so great, it wants to just tear the brass bolt apart. But so what he does then is he wraps that north-north configuration in plaster to make it look like a rock. And then he takes another rock that looks the same, and he takes a bunch of guys who have no education at all at Lockheed, and he takes it to the top of a 59-foot tower at Lockheed in White Settlement, Texas, and he revisits Galileo, and he drops his two rocks, one with the north-north magnet configuration, off his Leaning Tower of Pisa. And all nine times, he drops it nine times, the guys at the bottom tell him that the one with the north-north magnets, and they don't know that there's magnets in it, he just has them labeled, it falls much slower than the other one. So what that tells us is by altering the magnetic component of a falling body, it's canceling out a percentage of gravity. So that means that gravity has less effect on it, and he's violated, Galileo and Newtonian physics, really. And then what he does is he shows me photographs. These are classified photographs from Lockheed, and it shows a massive crane lowering a huge nuclear-powered north-north electromagnet configuration into the belly of a classified aircraft. This thing is so heavy. I mean, if you put this thing in a 747, you can see it in the photograph. You'll see it in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It would obviously weigh down a 747 so much you'd never get it off the ground.
Wow.
And they're putting it in the belly of a classified aircraft with wings on it because phase one is, you know, even if you cancel out gravity, you still have to be able to, you know, turn and use a little bit of the air mass to ride on the air cushion. So he kind of laughs when he realizes that I figured that out, because obviously if people saw this thing, they think, oh, well, it has wings and it's flying.
Mm-hmm.
But has anybody ever seen a flying saucer that or a winged aircraft that has no noise, has no thruster engines on, and appears to be hovering? Well, obviously, there's many reports like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you consider the nuclear component of the electromagnet. So they're using nuclear power to fire the electromagnets up so that they cancel out all of gravity. And you think of, for example, the Betty Cash case in Texas, which is, of course, where Lockheed is. And these helicopters are chasing this flying saucer that's glowing red hot and causes severe radiation burns to Betty Cash and her son and her mom. So we know that there's a great probability that this is one of Lockheed's experiments with the same type of nuclear-powered anti-gravity technology. But then he shows us some smaller experiments. What we're looking at is how to do this without using highly, you know, radioactive fuels to produce the energy in the north-north configuration. And that's where I come in. My personal designs that I have reverse-engineered from looking at amazing footage of UFOs over the years, I found a way to recycle the what you call the electromagnetism from the electromagnets without throwing it away into space, and do the same thing for far less energy. And I show how that works in the film very briefly, but not, I mean, you have to be really smart to figure out exactly how that works. Now, what a north-north configuration of electromagnet looks like, and this is really amazing because not only did I have the dream of the light spinning clockwise and anticlockwise, I interviewed in From Here to Andromeda a bunch of kids who were in Hurricane Katrina and saw a UFO in the eye of the hurricane. And you'll see them on camera. They know nothing about the physics of what I'm talking about. But they, too, saw a set of lights going clockwise and anti-clockwise on the same axis, just like what I dreamt about. But they saw this with their own eyes when they're looking at this UFO in the eye of Hurricane Katrina, all four or five of these little kids. And then when you look at crop circles, we look at crop circles and we see the clockwise, anti-clockwise lay of the grass in the center of all of the primary circles in crop circles. And we look at that as a waveform. When you look at what, if we look at a north configuration electromagnetic, let's just look at that for a second. If you take a nail, a ferrous nail, and you wrap copper wire clockwise around the nail, and you run electric current through it, that becomes an electric magnet or electromagnet, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if we take on the other side of that another electromagnet that's spinning clockwise as well, you know, a clockwise spinning wire, three-dimensionally, when you look through the space, it's going to look like clockwise, anti-clockwise on the same axis. So crop circles, I mean, you'll see this in the film, step by step. I'm Barbara Lamb, the crop circle researcher, takes us through the crop circles, and you'll see the message was there all the time. In fact, they even show a flying saucer crop circle with the inside of it taken out and flipped over, and it shows a spiraling, essentially the configuration of an electromagnet north-north configuration. But nobody really knew what it was. I mean, it was staring at us all that time. The answer was staring at us all that time. But you just have to be able to decode it. I don't really spell it out for people 100% as an engineering principle. You have to, in From Here to Andromeda, if you listen to Boyd Bushman and you look at these little experiments he does where you'll see Tesla coils levitating, you know, in the middle of the air, and you'll see little experiments that he does, we find out that aluminum is a key metal in opening up the anti-gravity force. And why, in 1947, in these FBI documents, did these kids build their flying saucers every time, all over the country, during the same time as Roswell, and all the Kenneth Arnold sighting and all the other sightings? Why did they all use aluminum, every one of them? How did they know that? Well, Bushman says when you interface aluminum with Tesla coils with the right configuration, it opens up the anti-gravity force. Now, when you get into the force, you think of the force in Star Wars and how Yoda uses the force to produce anti-gravity, you know, to throw, you know, his opponent's body against the wall, to, you know, show Luke Skywalker how to levitate things. Boyd Bushman, you know, shows us on the film that we already know, we only know four or five atomic forces. So think of the force in Star Wars when I say this. We have gravity, magnetism, the strong force which binds atoms together, and the weak force, which is the underlying force in the universe. And then some people separate magnetism and electromagnetism, so you get five forces. So we have five senses, which is also very interesting. Bushman tells us that they have identified, and he is the one who did the work on this, force number 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Wow.
I mean, I was so blown away when he said that. I was just, well, I mean, oh, my God. I mean, even Stephen Hawking, I mean, Brian Greene and string theorists don't know about these higher forces.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says the anti-gravity force is, it's the force that is causing the galaxies to drift apart after the Big Bang, whereas gravity is the force that wants to pull everything together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a higher force that is causing everything to drift apart. And he says when you take a physical object and you cause it to enter the fifth force, gravity and inertia has no effect on it anymore, which means we can explain why UFOs can stop on a dime and turn right at 90 degrees at several thousand miles an hour. You know, even we can't even imagine how fast they can do this. How the crash at Roswell happened and kept the alien bodies intact. How does a flying saucer hit the ground at, you know, 1,800 miles an hour, skip, and hit the side of a mountain miles later, and the bodies are intact? How do they do that? Because they've canceled out gravity. It has no effect on them because they're in the higher forces.
Right.
Near the end of the film, I ask him, you know, have you identified force number 6, 7, 8, and 9, and what can you do with them? and can you get to the Andromeda galaxy on these forces? And you'll have to see what he says to get the answer in the film.
From here to Andromeda.com, David, I have to ask you, getting away a little bit from the film, but staying with the message of the film, do you think that the scientific community outside that that bubble of military and government secrecy and the research they do you think that the scientific community on the outside will recognize what these people are saying in your film? Do you think that the scientific community will take it seriously or say, oh no, David's crazy? And I say that because I want to bring up then the media, how the media treated you on the air, not even touching some of this amazing stuff, and yet they really treated you badly. Do you think the science...
Well, you can't expect... I mean, firstly, I have sat down with Glenn Seaborg, who chaired the Atomic Energy Commission under Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and picked his brain. He won the Nobel Prize for the discovery of plutonium with Macmillan. He authorized all the nuclear testing in Nevada. I worked with Bogdan Castle-Magwitch on helium-3 fusion. I've been around people like Murray Gell-Mann, who won the Nobel Prize in physics for the discovery of quarks. I've been around all these guys for years and been a fly on the wall to their physics.
Mm-hmm.
I have never met anybody as brilliant as Boyd Bushman. He is so far beyond, truly, Einstein, all of them. When you listen to him and you get into the mathematics, he actually shows us the math formula on camera, and I put it in the film for the superbrains out there who can understand this formula. How he takes the Newtonian formula of gravity and he inverses it. He takes E equals MC squared, Einstein's formula, inverses it into M0C squared, and he shows you how that reveals the higher forces in the universe that we can do anything with, things beyond your wildest dreams. And when you consider Ben Rich's statement, once again, that we already have the technology to send ET back home, he's really telling you the truth. We really have this stuff. And what the film challenges, we have this whole scene in the film about the Shuttle Columbia incident where it appears, according to these photographs taken by this amateur astronomer, which were quoted in a San Francisco Chronicle article, showing a purple corkscrewing wave coming from outer space striking the space shuttle. I mean, this is a whopper of a scene. We get, you know, 8 or 9 of the top ufologists in the field, and we're debating whether ETs are not crashing by accident, that we're shooting them down in a sort of Star Wars, or they're shooting each other down because they're fighting over who gets Earth next. Because we're not willing to live sustainably, meaning using non-polluting technologies on this planet. We're willing to destroy all life on this planet, polluting our oceans, nuclear waste, oil, the global warming, sewage pollution. I mean, there are so many things we're doing to this planet, which in this film we address, and I show very simple solutions to how to live sustainably. But if we're not willing to, obviously, if you were an extraterrestrial civilization and you saw this beautiful blue pearl, you would want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would call dibs on it, and then another ray shows up. And so, you know, the question is, and this is a fascinating scene. In fact, Dean Heglund from The X-Files joined us in the scene to debate whether, you know, they are fighting over who gets Earth next. And then we get into the Shuttle Columbia incident in the fourth episode. From Here to Andromeda is 4 hours long. It's designed to be episodic, so you watch one episode at a time. I have people watching this thing, you know, 8 times in a row, the whole thing, because they're getting so much out of it. I'm really going deep. We go with Robert Thurman, and we go into not only UFOs from the Tibetan Buddhist perspective. Thurman is the Dalai Lama's top translator on Tibetan Buddhism in the Western civilization.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Time magazine called him one of the top 25 most influential people of 1997. In fact, Thurman has never spoken publicly about UFOs from the Tibetan Buddhist perspective on camera. And here he's telling us brilliant stuff, not only about how these Tibetan masters fly in these crafts beyond, you know, multiple universes, but also cities, whole cities and countries that are interdimensional that lay right on top of our dimension. And then we go into how digital cameras are picking up UFOs that people can't see during the time of the photography. And I explain, you know, of course, how this actually works. Ghosts, the interdimensional beings that I'm seeing, all of it is revealed through, you know, the interview with Robert Thurman. It's really a fascinating interview with him. And then we interviewed Professor David Phillips at Santa Monica College, who is an environmental, he teaches environmental sciences, and he's a psychologist. And here's this guy telling you that we're probably not going to survive because people don't want to change unless we get a very, very progressive president, you know, in the next election who does an emergency transformation of the whole country to sustainability. We're not going to survive. And then later in the film, he's going to tell you that he saw a flying saucer with his girlfriend in Scottsdale, Arizona in 1968, a 100-foot flying saucer, the same year that I saw one hovering above an alfalfa field. And her father works for the FAA, and they phone him when they're seeing the flying saucer at the Phoenix airport and tell them and gives them the coordinates of where the flying saucer is. And the same guy, David Phelps, you know, he lives in Topanga Canyon in Los Angeles, you know, near Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
And one night he's woken up at 2 a.m. to see Army helicopters chasing a flying saucer through the canyon during the same years that many people were seeing flying saucers in Topanga Canyon. So.
Wow.
We've got all these, you know, incredible, highly educated, credible witnesses in the film, and I know that, you know, it had Fox News saw the whole film. In fact, my segment producer over there did, and they love it. They actually really love it, but they won't tell you that on camera. These guys will sit there and tell you that Roswell was just a weather balloon.
Right.
And
it's
not
so
really
funny.
Treating it like a court case.
No, not at all. It's so funny that that's what they latch on to also. And, it, you know, whether it be Fox News or CNN, it's always that one particular case that they can't seem to branch out beyond that, and they always just pretty much try and make you look bad. David, I want to ask you your reaction to that Fox News interview. If you're listening on theblackvault.com, you can surf while you're listening from here to andromeda.com. Check out David's film. Trust me, I'm sure it's well worth it. I have yet to see it, but I will soon. From here to Andromeda.com, this is Black Vault Radio. You're listening to John Greenwald with David Cerita. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am John Greenwald Jr. We've been talking to David Sirita about From Here to Andromeda. Check it out online. A four-hour DVD set. It's only $24.95. Well worth it from David's interview just on Black Vault Radio. And there's so much more in that film that we have yet to hear and see. From Here to Andromeda.com. David, you were interviewed by Fox News. You can see it online. Correct me if I'm wrong. It is under From Here to Andromeda.com. Is that correct?
Well, if you go to YouTube and you search David Sirita, or Google Video and you search David Sirita, Fox and Friends, I was on July 4th. You just search that and it'll come up.
And, you know, I watched that with great interest because whenever my friends and colleagues get on these shows, I always look to see how they treat them. As I talked well into the top of this show, Yahoo just did a piece on me. It wasn't that bad. You get their editorial spins on everything. It could have been worse. So I'm fairly happy with it. The Fox News, were you happy with that interview on Fox and Friends?
I'm not happy with the speed with which they make you, you know, rattle the stuff off without giving an intelligent rebuttal. But I was happy when they put it on YouTube. Most of the people who saw it on YouTube were so upset at Fox. They were saying, you know, look at, it was an embarrassment to Fox. They may as well not even have people like us on unless they're really going to get into an intelligent dialogue about this.
Absolutely. And how do you
he says, the Fox host says, some guy says he knows a Navy doctor, you know, who shot down the Roswell, who knows the pilot who shot down the Roswell flying saucer. Well, it's not some guy. It's a Lockheed Martin senior research scientist with 26 U.S. patents on file and several others that are classified. And if you search USPTO.gov, and you search Boyd Bushman, B-O-Y-D, Bushman, you will see all his patents, and they all say Lockheed on them. So how can you tell this guy that you know more than he does, that you have, and a Fox News reporter has higher access than him?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is as credible as witnesses get. I mean, case point after case point, we show astronaut Gordon Cooper testified that he saw a flying saucer at Edwards Air Force Base, and he chased them in Germany post-World War II. You get case point after case point of expert witness testimony, and these news reporters just act like, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything because it's just some guy. And that's where they look really stupid. Because it's not some guy. I mean, these are all expert witnesses.
Right, and they do. And how are you supposed to condense decades and decades worth of research into this phenomenon in, you know, 10 seconds from what they give you? And the thing that I got a kick out of, I didn't see the CNN interview, but I know Stan Friedman was on, Buzz Aldrin, Governor from New Mexico, or the former governor of
Symington.
Yeah, Symington was on, and you've got five people in a round table, and how many minutes did they devote to that segment? I've read part of the transcripts. How can you do that? You can't do it. And I really wish the media would really kind of get beyond that Roswell debate and just bring somebody on and then trash him in 30 seconds and say, hey, it's commercial time. It's not about that anymore. And David, you've really proven that here on the Black Vault Radio. You've gone out there, you've done your research. We didn't even talk about your other films, but I'm sure you've got links on From Here to Andromeda.com. You're an established, very well producer. That's what I do for a living too. I recognize good work. I appreciate you coming on, sharing your work. It doesn't matter what Fox Friends says. Hey, you know what? Doesn't matter. Congrats for getting on there anyway. So, David, we're already at the bottom. Top of the hour, and we've got to run, unfortunately.
Okay.
But thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks, John. I mean, and thanks for doing this.
Absolutely,
get the truth out there. And you're one of the great researchers out there who contributes to, you know, getting the truth and pinpointing the documentation that builds the case that this is. I mean, it's the most exciting thing. It should be the biggest story in the news. I mean, that we're not alone in the universe and that somebody is teaching us anti-gravity, teaching us how to go to the stars and beyond, and we're ignoring it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy.
From Here to Andromeda.com, David, thanks again, and thank you all for listening right here on BVRN, the Black Vault Radio. I'm John Greenwald. We'll see you later this week.